Good morning, friends. It's so great to see everybody on a lovely spring day. If you do not have a seat yet, please find a seat. If you are looking for a friend, wave your hand in the back. If you are here and you would like to sit with other foster and adoptive moms, this front table right here, oh, look how friendly they are. Y'all can come sit up here if you would like to engage in that conversation. And then diagonal from them, we have a table full of working moms represented with Woven. Yay! So if either of those float your boat, make your way over here. If you guys will have a seat, I am going to pray for our morning real quick because I don't know about you guys. My morning has been crazy. So let's bring it down. It worked. I'm going to pray for our morning, and then I'm going to welcome our speaker up here. So if you will just be still with me for just a second. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this morning and for this place that we can gather, that you have provided us with people who see us as moms, who stay downstairs and say, yes, let me watch your child so you can listen uninterrupted and enjoy a cup of coffee with other women who are walking the same road. Lord, this is a divinely appointed position to be a mom. And I just thank you for the encouragement that comes from this stage, from women who have gone before us, who have walked closely with you. And I just pray that the words from Holly's mouth would be an encouragement to each of us, that it would spur us on to live our lives, bringing glory to you. So in all of these things, we pray in your name, Jesus. Amen. Our speaker today is the one and only Holly Barnett. Y'all may recognize her. She served faithfully on our team as a mentor mom for many years, and then we missed her so much. We said, please, please come back, and she did. So she is speaking today on biblical hospitality. If y'all will help me welcome Holly Barnett to the stage.
Yeah, do it. Okay. Good morning, ladies. It's so good to be back, and I'm so excited to see all of you here, and I just want to congratulate you. Like, you're here. Everyone is fully clothed. No one came in pajamas, and most of you look like you ran a brush through your hair, and so, like, that's a victory. So you're here, and I'm super excited. So I just encourage you just to take a deep breath and just realize that you're going to have a little bit of time to yourself. The few of you have babies, and I know you don't quite have time to yourself, but a lot of you don't. And so just enjoy that. I know in your stage of life, that's a rarity. And so I'm super excited for you that you get to have that time. So it really wasn't that long ago. It really, well, in some ways it wasn't, in some ways it wasn't, that I was in your shoes. I had a 1-year-old in the nursery, and then I was pregnant with my second, and so I was at MOPS, and I remember exactly what it was like to be in your shoes. So even though it's been a long time, I do remember. So let me introduce my family. Got a couple of pictures. So the picture of the wedding, that was my son Daniel's wedding, that was last April, and that is my husband David. We've been married for 34 years. And then Daniel is 26, and he married Teresa, and she is the most awesome daughter-in-law I could have ever asked for, so I'm so blessed. And then that's my daughter, Emily, and her husband, Benson, and he is equally as wonderful son-in-law. And when that picture was taken, Emily was expecting, and so go to the next. Okay, so then this is my precious grandbaby. This is Charlotte Bell. She was born in November. And if you're thinking to yourself, wow, this looks a lot like the baby that the last speaker showed, and that was Jill Moore, she spoke last month, it's because we share a grandbaby. So her son, Benson, is married to my daughter, Emily. Okay, you can go back to the previous. Okay, so the picture of us all in coats, that was all of us together in January, and you can see little Emily's wearing Charlotte in that picture. So, and that's really the only other family picture I have because they live out of state, and we just don't get to be together very much. So I'm just going to put a little shout out. If you have grandparents that live out of state and don't get to see your kids, like, do a little FaceTime after this and just let them see their precious grandbabies because it really, really means a lot. And I just also want to encourage you that hopefully one day you will get to experience grandmotherhood too because it is awesome. So that's my little PSA for the day. All right, we are going to talk about biblical hospitality today, and you might be thinking, okay, what does that mean? How is it different from entertaining? Well, I'm not really sure what that is, so let me kind of dive in. So biblical hospitality is other focused. It's about serving others. It's doing it and not expecting a reward, not expecting a thank you. This is not a way to fill your cup. It's a way to fill someone else's cup. It comes from within, and it's a spiritual issue. Versus entertaining, which is self-focused, performance-based. It's about impressing others with your things, your home, your cooking, things like that. It's what you see on Pinterest and Instagram. You probably saw a lot over Easter, depending on who you follow and what all they posted. It's about a lot of people get their cup filled by doing that. But that is way different than biblical hospitality. So entertaining is about me and my pride, and biblical hospitality is about others. So why practice hospitality? What does the Bible say about this? In Hebrews 13, 1 and 2, it says, keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing him. And then 1 Peter 4, 9, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. And we're going to spend a little bit of time on that, on how you manage to serve others without going to the pity party. Romans 12, 13, share with the Lord's people who are in need, practice hospitality. And Ephesians 6 and 7, serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not people. So if you think back to stories of Jesus and his disciples in the Bible, they were dependent on others for hospitality, for a place to stay and things to eat. There was no VRBO, Airbnb, hotels.com. Like, they stayed in people's homes. They ate the food that other people prepared. And you don't see Jesus complaining about the accommodations or criticizing how the house looked or what the food looked like. So biblical hospitality has been around for a long time, and it's something that we as believers are called to do. Before we dive in, I think you should all have a handout. It's got hospitality spelled out as an acrostic, and we're going to go through each letter of the word hospitality. But before we get started, I have just a couple of caveats. One is, please, please, please do not leave overwhelmed. Just take like one or two things. You're like, wow, okay, well, maybe I could start that, or I could think about that, or that might be a good thing for my family. Please don't leave with, I'm going to do these 10 things and we're going to do them next week. Just, that's not my point at all. It's just for you to start thinking about hospitality. And the second thing is, every household looks different. So just because I do it one way or somebody at your table does it one way does not mean that's the way to do it. You need to do what's best for you and your family. And the other part is, don't compare. I know we never compare ourselves to somebody who has it worse than us. We compare ourselves to somebody who has it better. And this is especially true on social media these days, with the constant flood of people sharing their highlight reel and not real life. So don't compare. Comparison's a thief of joy. So let's get started. So H in hospitality, and this is on your handout, is for heart. So hospitality is about your heart and your desire to serve others, or your obedience to the Lord in serving others. It's about making memories, sharing time with people. It's not about the food. It's not about the decor. If your heart is in the right place, it won't be about you. It won't be stressful. And I know you might be thinking like, well, that's easy for her to say. It totally stresses me out. So how many of you grew up in a home where your parents or your mom or dad had people over? You were familiar with the concept of hospitality. Raise your hand. Okay, so maybe less than half. And so how many of you, like, nobody ever came over to your house? You were the ones that, are you always like every holiday you went to grandma's house or something like that? So if you're in the situation where you didn't grow up in a home where hospitality was practiced, this is going to be something that will be a little more challenging for you, but you can do it. I know you can do it. And I'm going to give you some tips on how you can practice hospitality without it being stressful. But if your heart's in the right place, it's going to be, you're going to feel freedom. You're going to feel like get the warm fuzzies and not be completely stressed out. And that goes back to our Ephesians verse, serve wholeheartedly as you were serving the Lord, not people. It's about him and others and not about yourself. All right, the next one is O. O is for obstacles. So if you are not practicing hospitality, what is holding you back? And I will, before we go too much further, I want to just say, hospitality doesn't mean you have to have people over to your house for a dinner party. That means you can call a friend and you can be like, hey, do you want to meet at the park? You can reach out to somebody. You can say, let's go to lunch. Let's go have coffee. Let's come up here to the tree fort. That is practicing hospitality. And I realized as I was getting ready for this talk, thinking my daughter's got a five-month-old, hospitality might be, I will put a pod in the Keurig and we will sit on the floor. You can watch me fold clothes or whatever. I mean, that's hospitality. So don't, if your mindset is everything has to be perfect, that's not it. So when you think about obstacles, here's some of the things that I hear people say, like, my house is too small, we live in an apartment, I have all these kids, my house is messy, I can't cook. And what I would say to that is, no one notices the small stuff. No one is critiquing where you live and what you cooked. People are just excited to get an invitation to go somewhere. Think about if somebody called you and said, like, hey, do y'all want to come over for dinner? Are you not so excited? You're like, wow, I get a night out. I don't have to shop. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean up. And are you really worried what their house looks like? No, you're just like, this is a win. This is awesome. So people are not thinking about the tiny little things. No one cares if things aren't perfect. So just waiting on everything to be perfect is never going to happen. So if you have something that's like, oh, well, we can't have people over because we don't have a place for people to sit. Like, we don't have a table. Well, you can sit on the floor. You can put a blanket down. You can go have a picnic. If you can't cook, you can get your husband to grill. You can make sides, or you can pick up sides. We live in Dallas, ladies. There are a zillion places to get takeout. Or if you're like, oh, well, I can't afford to do that. Well, then can you order pizza? Like, you can do that. That is showing hospitality. Those are all obstacles. And we'll talk more about this later. And you're also going to have some table time to share with the women at your table. And I am sure all of you share different obstacles, but you can work through this. All right. S is for sensitive. What do I mean by sensitive? So you need to be in tune with who your guest is. And the best way to do that is to pray for them first. And this is especially true if you are having someone in your home that can be difficult. That might be a family member. It might be your mother-in-law, father-in-law. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people that have, you know, that type of situation, or a neighbor or somebody God's put on your heart that you like, you feel, I call it the hound of heaven. It's like after you, that you know you need to do something. The Holy Spirit is prompting you, but you know it's going to be hard. So pray for them first. And then think about who you're having over. Are you having elderly? Are you having somebody with kids? Are you having somebody with special needs? If you're having an older person, like grandparents over, like, they might need help getting in the house. Like, do you have steps? How can they navigate that? If they're on a walker or they're on a cane or not just sturdy, like, you certainly want to be sure that, like, a pathway's clear. You don't have toys, anything they could trip over. You also, they might need extra help getting food to the table, things like that. If somebody's coming over with kids, be like, hey, do you need a pack and play? What can I do to make it easy for you? If you are having somebody with special needs, we have somebody in our family who's in a wheelchair. So when they come over for dinner, I make sure that the chair where they're going to sit is gone, so that I've thought ahead, this is where you're going to sit, and I know you don't need a chair because you're going to be in your wheelchair. That's what that is. And a great verse for this is Colossians 4:6. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. And you're like, well, she just talked about like practical things, but conversation and being sensitive to that is very important too. So if you have a friend who is struggling with infertility and they come over to your house, you probably do not need to talk about all your pregnancy, birth, child rearing related issues. You want to be sensitive to that. If you have friends over, like all from your neighborhood or your same school or your church, and then you have another, someone that's there that isn't not in those same circles, like you don't want your entire conversation to be dominated by things that they can't relate to. I had that, my husband and I had that happen to us at a dinner party, and it makes you feel really left out, and it made us feel very unknown that they had no clue that we weren't at the same school that they were. So just think about that. The other part about that is if you're having somebody over and you know that they are struggling with a certain issue, let's just say pornography, or they have somebody in their family with addiction, or they're really in a financial crisis and your husband doesn't know that, you might want to give him a heads up like, hey, you know, don't forget that they have this family member that is struggling with addiction. So let's not go there in the conversation. Just give him the heads up. And then obviously the same thing, and you hear this every holiday, like don't talk about politics or, you know, things like that. I mean, really, any current event now is controversial, so know your audience, pray for them ahead of time, and be sensitive to them as they come and be with you. P is for practical, and this, I think, is what stumps a lot of people. Don't go overboard. Just keep things simple. Stay in your wheelhouse. Plan ahead. Create margin. Don't reinvent the wheel. So what do I mean by that? So don't go overboard. When I was in y'all's stage, I think my kids were a tiny bit older, and I have no idea where this came from. I thought if we had people over, every room in the house had to be clean, from the utility room to their bedrooms to whatever. Like, well, how was I as a hostess? I was completely exhausted and stressed out, and so was my family. And I realized, it took me a while, thankfully I realized, it's like, nobody cares what your washroom looks like. Nobody cares what their room looks like, especially if they have kids. They know they're probably a disaster. Just focus on where they're going to be. Shut all the rest of the doors. Like if you are having people over you haven't had a chance to pick up, just go around with your laundry basket, pick everything up, and go stick it in your car. Nobody is going to look in your car. Or I had a friend who put stuff in the dryer. Like nobody's going to look in your dryer. No one cares. Stay in your wheelhouse. So what does that mean? Like if you love to cook, but setting the table is not your thing, then like eat on trays, eat on the floor, have a picnic. Or if it's the opposite, like I can set a mean table, but I can't cook, then like get your husband involved. He can grill, or you can get everybody to bring something, or you can order a pizza. Just stay in what's gonna be comfortable for you. And your stage of life, you have to plan ahead, unless you're just going to do the pop the cure again or order pizza. Like if you're really having people over and you're going to try to cook something, you cannot go to Costco, do a grocery delivery order, clean your house, set your table, and get everything ready in the same day unless you're like Wonder Woman and you want to be completely stressed out of your mind. So you have to plan ahead. So that means like Monday you might make your grocery order, and Tuesday you might clean a couple of rooms or whatever. Just plan ahead. And then what I mean by schedule margin is just like you would put on your calendar, we have a play date or we have a doctor's appointment. You just write on there like you're going to spend 1 hour getting ready for people to come over. And that could be whatever it is, but you've created the time, you've given yourself margin so that you are not stressed about that. If you have one meal that you can rock, this is the meal I know how to cook, it tastes good, I know how long it takes me to do this, serve that meal every time. Nobody cares. Just stay in your wheelhouse. And if that's the case, like you have one thing like that, make notes, like, or create a little thing so that you know, like, when you serve that meal, this is what I need to order, this is what I need to shop for, so you're not having to reinvent every time you come over, like, I know I made that meal, but I can't remember how much I bought or if people liked it or what, you know, whatever. So think about that too. Be a servant and not a slave to your standard. So just keep it practical and don't go overboard. I is for inviting, and you're going to have time to talk about this at your table, but that is like using your five senses. What is like smell? What does your house smell like? Does it, can you light a candle? Can you put in a diffuser? Can you throw some cookies in the oven so it smells good? Sound, if you people come in over, put some music on. Touch. If you're having people to your table, the same table that you share with your children at dinner, like you might want to run a cloth over the table to make sure there's not, you know, sticky whatever. I mean, all the stuff that kids get on tables, and you like want to pull the chair out where they sit and make sure that it's not full of like crumbs and all that kind of stuff. So just think about that when it comes to touch. Taste can be something yummy that you made. It can be something yummy that you bought. Just all those, using your five senses to think through what's the environment going to be like for the people that you're having over. And also use that for your family, because you want your home to be a place that your kids love to be. And they're going to, believe it or not, they will associate like certain things like smells or things they saw or taste with your home. And as they get older, they'll have those memories. So I think that's important to think about. All right, T is for things. So everything belongs to God. Everything we have is His. And if you have nice things you got like as a wedding present and they're like sitting in a closet, what are you waiting for? Use them. There's never going to be the perfect time for you to have things out to use and enjoy. So you use your things. And then if you have something that's like super special, like your great grandma's teapot or something like that, that you would be devastated if it got broken, don't use that thing. Put that away, because when you have people over, invariably things happen, especially if they have little kids. There's going to be something that's broken, something gets spilled, there's some kind of a mess. And you want to remember that people are more important than things. And so anybody that's had somebody to their house, I'm sure has had this happen. You just have to like go with the flow. Remember it's about them. It's not about you. And just shake it off. So that's the T for things. A is for attitude. So you all heard the saying, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. If you are stressed out, angry, hostile, grumbling, then more than likely your family is going to feel that way too, and your guests are probably going to know that as well. So how do you have a good attitude? The first thing is you pray. Before, we talked about that, praying for the people that are coming over, or if you're meeting at the park or for coffee or whatever, and you pray for yourself. And this is especially true if you have somebody that's difficult that you're having, you're showing hospitality to. Pray for them, pray for yourself. And 1 Peter 4:9 says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. And I think as moms, and I still fall into this rut, and I'm not the one with little kids. Now it's more about taking care of aging parents. It's so easy to be like, I'm the only one in here. I'm doing all the dishes. I've done all the shopping. I've done all the cooking. I've cleaned the house. And before you know it, you're spiraling into this little pity party for yourself. And that attitude, it will rub off on your kids, and it will rub off on your husband. So what can you do to have a good attitude? How can you plan for that? So we talked about planning ahead, creating margin. But one thing you can do is you can delegate. So you can have other people bring things. You can divide and conquer with your husband. If you're having people over, you can figure out who's going to be in what role. Do not assume that your husband knows what to do. Because you can say, hey, we're having people over, and that to him is code for, I need to blow the leaves in the front yard. And you're thinking that is code for Can you put ice in the glasses, or can you put music on, or can you move chairs to the table so people can sit? So don't assume they know what to do. So I got to where, and I learned this after trial and error, I would just make a list for David, and I'd be like, I would like you to make sure we have the chairs are moved, that there's music playing, that we have ice in the glasses, and I would like for you to be ready 10 minutes before the guests get there so that in case I wasn't ready, I could go get ready, but that somebody would be fully dressed and ready to receive people when they came to your house. So delegate. Now, you may have an amazing husband who can remember things that you actually say to him, but if you don't, writing it down, that gets you out of the nag role. So that's one thing. And the one thing we found was helpful, then after you've had people over, then talk about like, hey, what worked well, what didn't work well. Next time we remember to not wait until the last minute to do this or whatever. So make notes, learn from how you do this together. My other thing about that is be sure you check with your spouse before you invite people over. And that goes both ways. Like, I'm sure y'all don't appreciate it. Be like, hey, I invited people to come over in 20 minutes. You're like, whoa, I have no food. We have no plan. What are we going to do? So don't do that to each other. Be on the same page. Okay, think through how the evening is going to go. So people are coming over in the winter. Where are they going to put their coats? Are you going to lay them on your bed? Are you going to put them on a chair? Are you going to hang them in a closet? If they're bringing kids, what are you going to do with them? It's going to be free for all. They're just going to run around. Is there going to be a kids table? Can you put a movie in for them? Can you hire like a high school kid to come over and entertain them while y'all try to have an adult conversation? Think about, are you going to sit at a table? Do you have enough chairs for everybody to sit in? If you don't, can you borrow chairs from a friend? Do you need to go and invest in some folding chairs? Where are people going to sit? Do you need an ice? Like, plan ahead, buy a bag of ice, or text a friend and have them bring it. Your dishwasher. Run your dishwasher before your friends come or the night before so that it's empty. There's nothing worse than you have a whole sink full of dirty dishes and your dishwasher is dirty too. You're like, wow, why didn't I think of this? So think about that. Also, if you are asking other people to bring things, like you've divided up the meal, think ahead like what they might need. Are they going to need oven space? Are they going to need space in your refrigerator? Are they going to need space in your freezer? And if they need that and you don't have it, be like, hey, I'm sorry, but we have one oven broken. We only have one oven, or we only have one oven to begin with. Like, say, can you just bring your dish warm? Or I don't have room in my freezer for you to store whatever. So think through what that's going to look like. If they're bringing dessert, you might reach out to that person and say, do we need plates? Do we need bowls? Do we need forks? Do we need spoons? Like, if you only have eight forks and you need forks for dinner or salad, and then you need it for dessert, like, do you want to go in there and wash those forks, or do you just want to use plastic or have them bring their own? And then you also want to do that if you're invited to somebody else's house and they've said, hey, can you bring dessert? So you as the guest want to think through what it's going to be like for the hostess if you come in and be like, oh, hey, I'm going to stick this in your freezer. And she's like, oh my gosh, please don't open my freezer. Like, everything might just come cascading out at you. Or you want to plan ahead, or don't just assume somebody has their things readily available. If somebody asks you to bring a salad, that doesn't mean you go to Tom Thumb and you grab a head of lettuce, a tomato, an onion, a cucumber, and you roll into their kitchen and you say, where's the cutting board? Do you have a knife? Do you have a bowl? Do you have, you know, tongs? Do you have salad dressing? Like, that's not, it's really, I mean, it is a salad, but it's really not probably what they had in mind. So you want to be sensitive as the hostess when people are bringing things, and you want to be sensitive to, if you're a guest, be a good guest. Be the kind of guest that they want to have back. Make notes afterwards of what works. And I think this is just a little side tip. Do this for Christmas and for Thanksgiving. If you are the person who hosts that, Thanksgiving is pretty much the same meal every single year. Just make a list of like what your grocery list is, what you cooked, what worked, what didn't work. So then you've already done it and it's not a big deal. All right. L is learn from others. So if you know somebody who this is something that comes so easy to them. They think it looks seamless. They are always so joyful and happy. They're constantly having people over at their house with ease. Just say, hey, how do you do this? How did you learn this? What can I learn from you? Tell me your tips. If you, let's say you don't have a table and you want to have people over, but you have a friend who has trays, be like, hey, can I borrow your trays? Like, people are so happy. Not everybody needs to own everything. Borrow from your friends. Same for, you know, plates or if you're, you know, anything. People are, not everybody needs to own the folding tables and the folding chairs and all that. So learn from others. I is for impressions, and that is keep the big picture in mind. What are people going to see when they get to your house? Like, can they find your house? Is it well marked? Do you need to give them directions? Is your front, where they're going to enter, is your front door, does it look like you were expecting somebody to come? Or are they having to like wipe the cobwebs out of the way? Does the porch light work? I know a lot of people, like if you use a back entrance or you come in through a garage and you don't go through your front door, like walk out and go through your front door and see what it looks like. Or does it look like you're expecting somebody? Focus on the areas where they're going to be. So that's like getting in the front door, walking to whatever room you're going to be in. If you're going to be in the living room or the family room, or you're going to be in the kitchen or where you're going to eat, think about those rooms. And then think about the bathroom too. If you have a family bathroom and they're going to use the family bathroom, then you probably want to run in there and one, you make sure the potty is flushed. If you have ones that are actually using the potty, you want to make sure there's not toothpaste globs in the sink, and you want to make sure it's relatively clean, not like white glove standard, but just the bare minimum. What do you need in a bathroom? You need toilet paper, you need soap, and you need something for them to dry their hands on. So just keep that in mind. Those are impressions. They are going to be like, well, she planned for me. She thought about me before I came over. T is for tips. So how to get started. Like, I don't know what to do. This overwhelms me. So I'm sure everybody has at least one friend that they can meet for coffee. That could be at your house. That could be here at the coffee shop. That could be at a local coffee place. You can meet somebody for lunch. You can make double and have them over, or y'all can, you know, go to some place and let the kids play and you can have lunch. You can start, have a Bible study in your house. Summer, when there's not Bible study up here at Watermark, you can have a little Bible study, a little four-week thing at your house, or you can do a book club, something like that. If you want to think like on a bigger scale and get your husband involved, you can start a supper club. So you'd get like four or five couples, and you would, if it's at your house, then you host, you set the table, you do the main course, and everybody else brings something. And we did this with friends for years, and it's really a lot of fun. And you only have to do it, depending on how many people you have, like once every 6 to 8 months. So you can do that. That's manageable. Or if that overwhelms you, do a progressive dinner. Get with your neighbors and be like, let's come to my house and we'll have appetizers, and then we'll have a main course at somebody else's house and we'll do dessert somewhere else. Just something fun. But there are lots of ways that you can get started. The other tip I would have for you is to double up on events. Like, what do you mean by that? So that means if you've decided you're going to have somebody over, let's say you're going to have community group over for dinner, and you've gone through all the things that you've thought through, the impressions, and you've cleaned the bathroom and you cleaned all that and you've bought food and you're going to cook, it's not that much more difficult to then have another group over on Sunday. Like, if you need to have your in-laws over or siblings or something like that, have one group over Friday night, have one group over Sunday. You can just reset the table exactly the same way. You can even serve the same food, or you can like get your husband to grill and then you can reinvent it into something else on Sunday. So this also works if you have kids whose birthdays are really close together, like one bounce house, one party one day, one party the next day. I know it sounds exhausting and it will be, but at least you're already in the mode. You can just get it done. All right. The last letter is Y, and that is for your husband and your kids. So there is no better place to practice hospitality than in your own home. That is the easiest place to begin. You all have the opportunity to do that. So how does that look when it comes to your husband? So what's important to your husband when he, and I know a lot of you might have husbands that work from home, so this is a little bit trickier, but what's important for your husband when the workday's over, whether that means he's walking from one room to the next or he's coming in the door? If you don't know what's important to him, I would encourage you to ask him. Is it important that you don't look like you did when he left the house that morning, that you've actually changed out of pajamas, that you don't have baby spit up all over you, that you've run a comb through your hair, that you've brushed your teeth and put on a little deodorant? I mean, does he care? Or does he, or would he rather like all the toys be picked up? Or does he want the children to be happy, like harmony, no bickering? Or does he want dinner ready? Like if you don't know, find out, because you could be spending a lot of time doing things that aren't important to him, and you might as well focus on what's important to him so that you're not exhausting yourself. So for my husband, one thing that was super important for him is he wanted to be greeted when he came home. He wanted the kids to not be engrossed in something else and be like, hey, Dad, you know, or completely ignore him. So we started this deal. It'd be like, you'd either hear the garage door come up, or he would send a text, or however, and I wouldn't know. So when there was like, okay, Daddy's home, and we would like run to the door and greet him and everything like that. And that was important to him, so I made an effort to make that happen. He also wanted to know that there was a plan for dinner. It didn't necessarily have to be ready or on the table, but he wanted to know that I had thought about what was going to be for dinner, because he loves food, and this was important to him. And so I would try to make an effort to have at least thought about it. Now, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I might be like, oh my goodness, I have no plan. So I would like put a couple of pots on the stove, throw some silverware out, and make it at least look like I had a plan. I'm just being honest here. So find out about that. The other thing I would say is, whether your husband's at working at home or coming in, share your struggles at an appropriate time. So I know the days are long. I know you're exhausted, but the minute he walks in the door is not the time to be like, oh my gosh, I've had such a terrible day. These kids are driving me nuts. Can you take the baby? I've got to get out of here. Like, no, like try to get it together. Try to hold yourself together. I think it really helps if you can get a warning from your husband to like get yourself in the right headspace before they walk in. And if you've had a bad day, you send him a message, be like, it has been a day. Like, I really need time to debrief when we have a chance, and then create that time. He's going to have the heads up what he's walking into. He's going to be a better listener, hopefully, if you do it in the right space. And then, and hopefully, I know this doesn't always happen with moms, hopefully he'll reciprocate, because there's nothing worse as a mom if you've been out doing something and you come in and you're greeted with that very same thing, like, take this child, I don't know what to do, or you look like a bomb has gone off in your house. So hopefully you'll set the tone by finding out what's important for him and not bombarding him when he comes in, that he'll reciprocate. Now, what does hospitality look like to your kids? And you're thinking, well, I'm like the queen of hospitality because I take care of their every need. I feed them, I clothe them, I drive them, I do all the things for them right now. But this stage will not last forever, and they are going to get big on you. I know for some of you, you're like, yes, I can't wait. And some of you are like, I don't want my baby to get big. But they will get big on you. Right now, your kids' friends are your friends' kids. If you have, your kids are playing with people's children that you know, but that's not always going to be the case. When they go to school, when they start playing sports or doing other activities, they're going to be involved with children, and you won't know them, or you won't know their parents. And so you want your home to be the place that your kids want to bring friends. You want your home to be that home. You want to have a chance to get to know those kids. You really, we don't even need to go there about just the safety and think concerns you have of letting your child go to someone's home if you don't really know them. So you want your home to be the place where the kids want to go. So how do you practically do that? So one is, you say yes. So you don't have to say yes every time. You're not having a play dates every day or sleepovers every weekend, but you want to say yes as much as you possibly can. You want to know that it's going to be messy. I mean, kids are messy. Teenagers are messier. So just know that that's going to happen. Know that there's going to be some of that involved. You want to have food in the house, some kind of snacks or something. You want to be caught off guard if they have friends over. And I've seen this with our kids are 26 and 28 right now. And we've seen their friends that we had over in our house a lot being like, oh my gosh, we have so many fond memories of being in your home. We loved being in your home. Y'all were like second parents to me. We had a couple of kiddos that we really didn't know. They were going through some super difficult things in their home, like watching their parents not get along and ultimately get divorced. And I think it was so important for them. Like, we made an impression on them that, you know, we were, our home looked different than the home they were in. And so you just never know. So it takes work to create that, but I think it's so, so worthwhile. And then the other part of this is I was raised, my mom, my dad died when I was very young. And so it was just my mom and myself. And so we were like the orphan home. Like, it, Thanksgiving, Christmas, anybody who didn't have a place to go, I was always at our house. Like, she had people over all the time, was always having people around. So I grew up with it. So this wasn't new to me. And so we did the same thing, always having people around. And so now my daughter does the same thing. And it's really been fun to see her do that. And then she has her, they're in the military. And so there are a lot of people who don't have family close by. It's been really fun for her to open her home and have people in. And people are always excited to come over because they know they're going to feel welcome when they're at her house. So all these things to say is like, it's worth the investment. They're watching you. They're watching what you do. They're watching how you serve others. They're watching your attitude. And I just encourage you, and now that I have the benefit of hindsight, it was worth doing. So, all right, we're going to take a break right now, and you're going to have table time. You have awesome, awesome, smart ladies at your table, and I hope y'all just cheer and share your struggles, share your ideas, and then we are going to come back up in a little bit. Martha and I are going to come back up and answer some questions.
Good morning. Hello, hello. We're going to rein it back in, and we are going to do just a little bit of Q&A with Miss Holly here for a second. I love what she talks about. I think it's so practical. If any of you come over to my house and you look in the back of my car, don't judge me because I'm totally going to put a basket full of junk in there every time somebody comes over. If you did not get a handout, if you snuck in and we missed you, there is a handout, and it has every letter and the little phrase. Those are on the back table. So feel free to grab one of those if you missed that. I know some of y'all were taking diligent notes. But yeah, we're just going to pick Holly's brain for a quick second. So the first question that we have, big kind of overview question. Where would be a good place to start when you're considering biblical hospitality? And then, of course, with that, like, who should we bring into the conversation for something like that?
So I would say if you're intimidated by having somebody over to your home, then just reach out to a friend and meet for coffee or meet for lunch or go with the kids to the park. Like, that is showing hospitality. So that would be a super, I think, like, easy, non-intimidating way to start. And then if you're game for having somebody over to your home, I would say start small. Same thing, one friend, two friends, simple. Don't plan a meal. Plan, like, a snack or dessert and coffee, or, you know, somebody gets Chick-fil-A on their way over and you eat that. So something simple. And then who to bring into the conversation. So if you're going to have couples over, be sure you bring your husband into the conversation, like, that he's game for this, that he thinks you'll have the capacity and the bandwidth to do that. So that would be a good place to start.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. The husband, I've definitely started that conversation before and then been like, oh, I should check with my husband and be sure that he's okay with us having people over.
Well, and I have actually a good story to share about that. So this is an example of when I did not do that. And it was also a submission lesson as well. So I decided that it would be super fun one year to have a costume party for Halloween. Now, I know Halloween can be controversial, but it was just going to be fun. Like, adult people come over, and we're dressed up, and we just have fun. So I thought this would be a great idea. So I got the Darling invitations. I had them printed. I went to the costume shop. I rented us costumes. And then I told David, guess what? We're having a Halloween party. And he's like, no, we're not. And I was like, what? And he's like, no, I don't want to dress up. I don't want to do this. And so I was super disappointed, but we did not have the Halloween party. And then probably a week before we would have had the party, we had an issue come up with one of our kids that was all-consuming and totally derailing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the Lord totally knew that my plan was not the best plan. And so that's just my little side note of, like, check with your spouse ahead of time.
That's great. Okay, for people who are sitting here going, hospitality is not my gift, what encouragement would you give to them?
You can do it. It is not... It can be done easily and without difficulty. Everybody can meet a friend somewhere for something. Even if money's an issue, you can meet at the park and visit while the kids play. You can go for a walk. You can push the kids in strollers. Like, you can do this. I'm not going to say that's a cop-out, because there's a lot of things that aren't people's gifts, but we can learn to do things. You can learn from others. Like, if you know, you can do it. So I would not let that hold you back. And for the reasons we talked about earlier, like, you want to show hospitality to your family. You want to do that with your kids. You want your kids' friends at your house when they're older. So start now.
I love that. That's so good. All right.
Ask for help. I'm looking at my notes. Ask for help. Like, if you really, really are struggling with this, ask a friend. My email's on the handout. Send me an email, and then I could give you my phone number. Happy, happy to help you.
Okay, that's so good. Okay, next question here. Does hospitality always have to be in my home? You touched on this a little bit. Expand on that a little bit more.
No, it doesn't have to be in your home. Like, you can meet somebody up here, meet somebody at the tree fort, or meet somebody in the coffee shop here. Elizabeth Tamlin, who's one of the mentor moms in the Nest, we used to go to Target together. We would load the kids in the basket at Target, and we would buy one popcorn. We would split like four ways, and we would walk around Target. I mean, like, and then you kind of like pick up all the little popcorn that they drop all over the floor. But yeah, it doesn't have to be in your home. There are lots of opportunities to do different things and be creative with that.
I think that's so good. And I think, you know, kind of corresponding with the previous slide and what you talked about, sometimes if you just make margin in your life to be able to say yes, that you're not so busy planning all the things, that when somebody needs something, when somebody calls and they're just having a hard day, you can say, hey, yes, let's go walk Target, popcorn, Target, Old Faithful.
Or the other, I mean, I know I'm dating myself, because now, I mean, you can order so much on Amazon or online or whatever that gets delivered to your house that you don't really have to run as many errands. But we used to do the same thing with errands, like things you didn't do. We'd load all the kids in the car and we would go run all our errands. And then you would have an adult that could sit in the car with the kids. And then, like, I would run into the dry cleaners and she would sit in the car, or we would go somewhere and she would run in. So, I mean, that's hospitality too. Like, just thinking outside the box, like, what can you do because it was a win-win. Like, we got to have adult conversation and the kids got to have, you know, kid time, and we knocked out our to-do list. So it was great.
That's awesome. Okay. This next question. I have someone in my life who is particularly difficult to open my home to. How should I approach biblical hospitality with them? Asking for a friend.
The first thing I would say is pray. Like, pray about this. Like, and really ask yourself too, like, why is it this person is difficult? Is it more because they're so different than me and it really rubs me the wrong way? Because a lot of times the Lord is really trying to teach you that the problem is you. The problem is not somebody else. So pray about it. Ask your spouse. Ask your community group. And then one thing is, you don't necessarily have to have them to your home. Like let's just say, for example, it's your mother-in-law, and you feel like when she comes to your home, she's judging you, she's critical of you, she's always giving you advice on, you know, how you can be doing things different or better. Then maybe you start by meeting someplace, like out of the home, so that she doesn't have that opportunity to do that, and you don't feel so judged. That would be one suggestion. The other suggestion would be, you have them over, have a hard stop. Like, we are gonna, we'd love you to come over from 6 to 7:30, and then at 7:30 be like, I'm sorry, it's time for us to put the kids to bed. We loved having you. Bye. Or you know, I know that sounds it's easier said than done, but like, figure out a way that you can have a hard stop. So that it's a very limited amount of time. Like, start little bitty and then get bigger, or have them over for coffee and dessert or breakfast or something, things where they don't have the opportunity to linger a long time. Let me look what my other notes were.
No, I mean, I think that's so good. That reminds me of a friend of mine who actually has a neighbor who's older and is very needy when she comes over. Well, and then my friend has several small children, so it's just a lot to juggle. And she kind of said, this woman needs companionship. I want to open my home to her. But she did the same thing. It's a cup of coffee that she offers her, the K-cup in the pod in the Keurig. She's not going all out, and they just sit and they play, and then she has the hard stop. Hey, we have to leave for gymnastics at 10 a.m. And so she's set those boundaries really well. That's a great point.
Exactly. Or you have them over before you have to run carpool or whatever, so that there's a definite, I have to be out the door. And this is similar, but a little bit different. So my daughter lives out of state, and my husband's mom, so her grandmother, lives here. And you cannot have a 10-minute conversation with her. Every time you call her, you know you're in for at least 45 minutes or an hour. But she wanted her to get to see Charlotte. So what she started doing is she will FaceTime her while she's reading her a bedtime book. And then she's like, sorry, I got to put Charlotte to bed. So like, there's a hard stop. Like, she's filled her cup, and then she has a way to get out of it without just feeling bad about cutting off the conversation, or, you know, ending up putting Charlotte to bed an hour past her bedtime. So things like that can really be helpful especially when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't have good boundaries or is difficult.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. What can practicing biblical hospitality teach our children? How have you seen this play out? Because we know that you have opened your home a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think I shared, I mean, one, the unintended benefit that we've seen from their friends telling us what it meant to them to be in our home, and I think that was really meaningful. And then my son had a couple of friends who had really hard family situations, and they would be like, he would come and he'd be like, he wants to know if he can spend the night. And we were always, you know, like, after checking with the parents, like, yes, he can, just to be open and available to that, so that they felt warm and welcomed. And so that's been one thing. And then just to see, I talked about my daughter and how she's kind of followed and is welcoming people, but my son does the same thing. He's like one of these kids that has a bunch of friends, and he is always like inviting them to do stuff, and then it gets reciprocated. He's got an amazing friend group. So I think that just comes from, like, I mean, you can't always be the recipient of hospitality. So think about that. At some point, people are going to quit asking you if you don't ever reciprocate. So that's why it's like, especially if you have somebody that's been so generous with you and had you over multiple times, but you're like paralyzed by the thought of having them over at your house, then just invite them to lunch or coffee or something like that. It doesn't have to be hard, but just for them to know that you want to spend time with them as well.
I love that. That, you know, I naturally reach out to people and want to invite them in. And I think there was a season where we had lots of little children in our home and it was not practical. And it was really hard for me, but it was also a huge blessing to reach out and ask others. And they were so excited to help in any way. So if you fall into that category too, where you're just in the season where you're like, I cannot take dinner to people, just embrace that also and know that like that season will come, that busyness does pass. But you can also enjoy being a recipient of that, knowing how much you enjoy serving. Let other people serve you too. Okay. And our last question that we've got, what guidance would you give to someone who is processing being hospitable in a, we're going to call it in a big way. And this would be something like considering opening your home for foster care or adoption, opening a room in your home for someone in need, some of those like bigger hospitality decisions. Have y'all ever walked through anything like that?
I will honestly say, no, we have not. And this, I think, goes back to every household looks different. Everybody's got different capacity for different things. The one thing and I think Martha can address this because you fostered. So I know that you definitely want to check with your husband first before you would do anything like that. And you would want to get more information and be sure you're both completely on the same page before you would do something like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for us, it started as conversations between us. Somebody pointed us to the foster and an intro to foster care and adoption class that Watermark hosts. And that was awesome in information, but also just stirring questions to ask each other. We opened it up to our community group. And I would say the golden rule that we learned at that class, and this could transcend any big decision that you and your husband are making together, is that you need two green lights to make a green light. So if you're green and your husband is yellow, that's a red light. If you're red and your husband's green, that's a red light. So y'all both need to be 100% on the same page before you make any kind of big decision like that. But there's lots of resources through the, for specifically foster care and adoption on the Life Initiative page that Watermark has. And then if you have specific questions, I'm an open book. And so are these ladies right here. Like I just threw you right under. anything else that you want to add or mention?
I think there was one more question you might not have about, okay. I live far away. Like I can't, we live too far out. Mm. So same thing, meet people in the middle, or you might be surprised. Like people might be willing to come to your house. Like I had a friend that was in a group with probably for like 6 or 7 years, and we never went to her house. We were never asked to go to her house. She just assumed that we never wanted to go, and that really wasn't true. So if that's something that's holding you back, that's an obstacle. Like ask, and you might be surprised. What's the other one? You have a small apartment, like. Some of the best memories are small spaces. Like, people sit on the floor. They don't care. I mean, y'all are all still young. You can get up and off the floor. You do it all the time with kids. That shouldn't really hold you back. Or think outside the box. Like, we had a really small dining room table and not enough chairs. And I was going to host a meal. And I went to Lowe's and got a big piece of plywood and set it on top of my dining room table and then went and bought some fabric and laid it over the top of it and set the table. Like, there are creative ways to think out of the box if you have an obstacle like that.
I love that. I'm totally going to borrow that idea. Okay, well, we do have a couple more questions for table time, and we're going to let you guys chat amongst yourself, discuss anything that these questions brought up, anything else that Holly said, and then we've got maybe another 15 minutes or so of table time, and then we'll circle back up. So thank you, ladies. Thanks, Holly.